More men are asking for a PSA screening as a means of detecting prostate cancer. What are the prostate cancer screening guidelines? Is there a point in a man's life when screening should stop and where the detection of prostate cancer does not benefit the patient? A study published in the November 15th issue of the Journal of the American Medical Association entitled PSA Screening Among Elderly Men with Limited Life Expectancies asked this and other questions, and I'm pleased to introduce Dr. Louise Walker, who is staff physician at the San Francisco Veterans Affairs Medical Center, assistant professor of medicine of geriatrics at the University of California, San Francisco, and member of the UCSF Comprehensive Cancer Center. Good afternoon.
Thank you so much.
What is the incidence of prostate cancer in North America?
What is the incidence of prostate cancer?
Yes.
Oh, gosh. I mean, it's the most common cancer detected in men.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I can give you an actual number of the actual percentage of people that have, but it's certainly the most common. It's not the most common cause of mortality, though. So it's while it's the most common detected, mm-hmm. it's not the leading cause of cancer mortality.
Now, with respect to standard of care, what is to date the standard of care with respect to prostate cancer screening?
Well, most guidelines, well, actually, they're all over the map. There's some controversy about what is the standard for prostate cancer screening. So I can give you a couple sort of examples. So
sure.
The National Cancer Institute, the American Urologic Association, recommend PSA screening for men 50 and above if they have a life expectancy greater than 10 years. Then you have there's other guidelines, like the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force, that look at evidence or lack thereof and say, well, you know, evidence is lacking about the benefit of PSA testing in any age, and they recommend, they said that there's insufficient evidence to recommend for or against, but they do say that screening men who have limited life expectancies should not be done.
Now, turning to your research, I'm always curious to know what the reasons were why a person has decided to conduct a particular arm of research. What was it that you found interesting and wanted to look at and try and figure out?
I'm a geriatrician, so I see lots of older men, and many of my patients have a lot of severe illnesses, and I was always amazed at the number of people that were getting screening PSAs, and then, you know, it would be elevated, then they'd go for a biopsy, they'd be told they had low-grade prostate cancer, but they were told very clearly they shouldn't worry about it because they already have inoperable, you know, coronary artery disease, they have congestive heart failure. So they're told, don't worry about this, low-grade prostate cancer. It'll never affect you. But that's the only thing they would think about when I'd see them in clinic. I'm now a cancer patient. This is going to get me. And so they really wanted to continue to follow PSAs. We do all this stuff. And it would take time away from care that they should have been getting for their diseases that were important, and cause them a lot of distress for basically something that would never have affected them if they had not been screened. So I was seeing, I think, a lot of harm in my clinic from PSA screening in older men with significant health problems. And I wondered, well, you know, how often are elderly men in poor health being screened? Because that's certainly not something that's recommended by the guidelines.
So then how did you design your study?
So this was basically, I mean, the VA has an amazing electronic medical record system. So we were able to basically get PSA results and information from VAs across the U.S. Because we would basically, they have a central data center where they pull all these PSA results and keep them. And so what we did is we basically did what was called a cohort study where we looked at men who were seen at VA, you know, VAs across the U.S. in 2002 and 2003, and basically looked to see how many people actually had a PSA test in 2003 to basically calculate rates based on age and based on a person's health.
And what were the results?
So what we found is that PSA screening rates were quite high. We found that it was overall rate of PSA screening, 56% of elderly people, this is people over age 70, or men over age 70, 56% had a screening PSA in 2003. And what was really striking is that, you know, even among men who were 80 and above, who had severe illnesses, who had, we looked at something called the Charlson Comorbidity Index and looked how many people had four or more points on that, meaning they had four or more severe illnesses. So even among 80-year-olds with four or more severe illnesses, screening rates were still around, I think it was around 41% of the men had had a screening PSA in 2003, which is quite high. So, and these are men that, I mean, really the only thing that PSA is going to do for them is potentially cause them harm.
Right.
Since they don't have the life expectancy to benefit.
Now, what were some of the reasons why they had this screening done?
You know, that's one thing we do not have great information on. What we ended up doing is we did some random chart reviews, and we randomly chose charts to look at to try and see if we could find out, you know, is there some reason why people are getting all these PSA tests? And at least of the random sample of 100 charts that we looked at, most of them had absolutely no reason given that the PSA test simply showed up as a lab test, you know, right next to the cholesterol and sort of other things that were being ordered with really no explanation. Some of them appeared under healthcare maintenance section of the chart, meaning that people just kind of viewed this as a, you know, routine thing. And about 4% of the charts had documented that the patient had actually requested the test. But the vast majority just kind of showed up as, you know, either as a lab without any explanation or as basically in the healthcare maintenance as screening.
Now, for our listeners, you did mention that there were recommendations based on 10-year life expectancies. Can you explain why that 10-year period was chosen?
The 10-year period is based on, well, there's a couple things. So, like a lot of screening tests, there's a lag time between when you do the test to when you can potentially benefit. So when you do the test, everybody's subjected to the potential harms that can happen. But the only people who can potentially benefit are the people who live at, you know, at least 10 years down the road, say. And that comes from, I guess, two areas of data. One is if you look at the current randomized controlled trials that are ongoing, there's two of them right now, and they're now in their 12th year, I think, into their 12th year of the trial, and have yet to find any benefit survival-wise from PSA testing. So that suggests that there's a long lag time, at least, you know, 12 years or more,
right,
if PSA is ever going to show a benefit. And then they also base that on natural history studies where they look at survival among men with early stage prostate cancer who are not treated and sort of follow them, and they see that older men, this early stage prostate cancer has absolutely no effect on them until at least 10 or 15 years in the future. So that's where that sort of 10-year life expectancy comes from. It doesn't make any sense to biopsy, find something
right,
in someone who's having absolutely no symptoms who, you know, is going to die in the next 5-10 years.
And that sort of leads me to the next question and comment that I had is usually when a test is done, you're expected to act on the result. So in this case, if you're doing these tests and these men don't have a life expectancy of 10 years, it begs that question, why are we doing this test in the first place?
I think that's a very good point, because I do really feel strongly that you shouldn't do a test if you're not going to act on it, because people say, oh, it's just a blood test, and if it comes back abnormal, then you can make the decision. But then you leave the man or the family or, you know, all the people involved worried about it, because now you have an abnormal finding that more than likely, you know, doesn't mean anything.
That's right.
But you have a lot of people that worry about that and fixate on that, and that's what I've seen in my clinic. So I think that even getting a test can be very harmful, even if you decide not to go down the road and do biopsies or, you know, prostatectomies or all the other stuff. But all along the road, once you know you have an abnormal result, you've already labeled someone as having a problem and make them increasingly worried that they have a cancer that they could die of.
So what conclusions can be made from this study, and are there any recommendations that come from this that you think would benefit patients and also improve the standard of care for, in this case, men that have life expectancies of or limited life expectancy?
Right. So I guess there's a couple things. I mean, one thing that's highlighted is that, I mean, clearly the rates of PSA screening in older men who have multiple health problems should be lower than what is currently happening. And, you know, I think there's several ways that we could go about trying to do this. One is just even putting it out there is to think about when you're ordering a PSA test that it should be accompanied by a discussion with a patient about the risks and benefits rather than just adding it onto any of these blood tests. So there should be, you know, it definitely should be thought about in a different way than like cholesterol screening. I think the other trying to think what else, what other things I would say. I think the other issues are thinking about some of these quality indicators that we have, and maybe thinking about ways that encourage people to not do something when it's appropriate not to do something. I think a lot of our quality measures encourage people to do things, but don't really encourage people or reward them when they do when they say, you know, this is inappropriate, I'm going to avoid doing this because I don't want to harm you. And I think that's something that has to be built in. But I think just being, I think clinicians also, you know, things we could do to help people think about prognosis a little bit more. I think that's an underthought about thing when you're making recommendations about medical interventions, is really think about prognosis and helping clinicians have better tools for doing that. And then I think finally it would be really to educate the public. I'm amazed how often people think, oh, it's just a blood test, it can do no harm to me, this is not a big deal. But to really do some PR work and educate the public that there are many downsides to PSA screening. And if you have very little chance of benefit, and I'll say that in the largest sense because this is a test that has never even been proven to benefit anyone of any age, but certainly in older men who have multiple comorbid illnesses, is much more likely to harm you than to benefit you. And I think they need to realize that the test becomes more inaccurate. There's a lot of reasons why it would be less helpful or potentially harmful in an older person. So I think educating public, helping clinicians think about prognosis, helping quality indicators do a better job of encouraging physicians to make, you know, informed decisions about risk and benefits for patients, I think those would all be helpful.
Well, Dr. Louise Walker is staff physician at the San Francisco Veterans Affairs Medical Center, assistant professor of medicine and geriatrics at the University of California, San Francisco, and member of the UCSF Comprehensive Cancer Center. Dr. Walker, I'd like to thank you very much for taking the opportunity to talk about this study, and it certainly raises some very important points, especially with regards to, do we really do a test? Do we really need to do the test? And what do we do with that result after we find out? I'd like to thank you very much for your time today.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for inviting me.
You're very welcome.